Welcome to the Undercurrent Podcast. I'm your host, Liana Lumawig, life coach, surfer, and ex-corporate girl living in Bali. I've been in unfulfilling jobs and relationships that used to drain my energy and confidence to the point where I was miserable. If you can relate, this podcast is for you. I'm here to tell you that you don't have to stay stuck and settle for anything less than what makes you happy. You can choose how to work, love, and live on your terms. And this podcast will show you how. Let's dive in. Welcome back to the Undercurrent Podcast. I have here with me Claire Saunders. She's a coach and mental health advocate. We met in Bali, actually, when she was in a travel group program back, I think, in 2017.
It was, yeah.
Yeah, and we like met at a co-working space and like hit it off when we first met and have been staying in touch on social media with occasional Zoom calls ever since. Welcome, Claire.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Yeah, thanks for coming on the show. So, like I said, I really enjoy staying connected with Claire. I know all about her journey. But as you know, if you've been listening to the Undercurrent Podcast, you know I love interviewing people who live their lives in unique and inspiring ways. And Claire does that with her life. So I'm really excited to dive in to your story and have other people be inspired by how you live your life.
Brilliant. Yeah, sounds great.
Great. So Claire, where are you from?
So I originally grew up in quite a small kind of suburban town in Kent. And then I went off to university. And then after university, I moved, like when I was like 25, I moved to London. And then I lived there for 20 years before making some changes.
Okay. So what was life like in London?
Oh my God. I mean, moving there when you were 25 was incredible, right? Because I was working in advertising and it was like the center of everything. And I remember thinking, oh my God, I get to live here. And, you know, everything was on my doorstep. And I was actually living with some friends from college. So we all kind of gravitated towards London after our studies. And we all had like kind of cool jobs, but then we had money too. So, you know, we got to kind of live the student life, but with, you know, a disposable income. And we had a blast. It was some really good times.
Sounds like a dream in your 20s, like ideal.
It was, yeah. Right. So yeah, we worked hard, we partied hard, right? That was kind of the London life. And we were all just exploring kind of where our careers were gonna go. Like most of us, we were all kind of in creative industries of some description, maybe. Like I was working in advertising, like other friends were working in like publishing and stuff. So it was fun. It was really fun.
Nice. Okay, so you were living in London for 20 years, working in advertising, working in kind of corporate settings.
Yeah. So I worked mostly in advertising agencies, and then I moved across to work in-house. So I then became the client, and I worked in marketing teams in financial services. So you can't really get more corporate than banking, right?
Okay. So like I said in the beginning, Claire lives a unique life, and working in marketing and finance is not super unique.
No, not at all.
So what was the transition like from moving from corporate finance marketing to doing something else? Like what happened to have you change also?
I think, you know, I did it for a really long time. Like, so, you know, the majority of my career was spent doing that. And I think I burnt out like probably like 3 or 4 times and would just kind of pick myself back up and like just keep going, because I think I didn't really know what else to do. London's pretty intense anyway. So people just constantly were kind of quite stressed and it just seemed like the norm.
Right.
To be under pressure. And I think like the third time I burnt out, I was just like, what, like, this is crazy. And it kind of coincided with me turning 40 as well. So like a new decade. Mm-hmm. I'd also decided to leave my marriage as well. So like everything kind of felt like it was kind of all coming to the surface of like, I can't really live this way anymore, but I didn't know what to do instead, right? So I basically took the brave decision to, I started traveling a lot. That was like a big theme. So I started to travel and I could only go away. Like I couldn't like take an extended time. I would just go away for 2 weeks, like on a really nice hot, you know, break. And I'd come back and then I'd be like, no, nothing's really changed. Right. I had a great time, but I'm back in it. And the final kind of decision came when they had a big restructure at work. And I'd just come back from Nicaragua, actually. I'd just been on an amazing trip. And even though I'd been on the most amazing trip ever, I hadn't really relaxed on that trip. I'd felt like quite wired. And I was reading a book actually called, I think it was called like How to Quit Your Corporate Job and Do Something More Interesting or something cheesy like that, right? I'd literally been reading that book on holiday and trying to work out like how I was going to make this happen. And then I do believe like the universe kind of, you know, works in great ways. And I came back and they said, oh, there's this restructure and, you know, your role is going to change. And like, and I kind of looked at the organization chart and I was like, I actually think like my job might not exist anymore. So I said to my boss, I said, can we make my job like not exist? And they call it like in the UK, like voluntary redundancy, where you kind of put your hand up and go, I'm happy to go. And you get like a compensation package if you do that. So that was kind of the game changer for me, because finances are always like the tricky part of making these transitions, right? Right. Because, you know, by this point I was divorced. I had a mortgage on my house. Like my expenses were pretty high. And that was kind of what was stopping me from doing stuff. But then I'd managed to save a bit of money. And then with this compensation package, I was like, okay, this is a game changer because this gives me some time. Mm-hmm. So I decided to just take it. And I had 3 months of my notice that I had to work. So I had 3 months to kind of get my head around it. And everyone's like, what are you going to do? And I was like, I don't know. I'm just going to take some time off. I'm going to just like chill for the summer. I'm going to go to Bali, which is when I then met you. And I didn't really have a plan. I was just going to, for the first time ever, like not plan ahead, right? Because I'd always just been like, I'm going to go to school and get good grades. I'm going to go to university and then get my job and then blah, blah, blah. And for the first time, there was like no plan. Mm-hmm. I was just going to see what happened.
Wow. Okay. So let me pause there for a second. So I met you shortly after this?
Yeah. That's when you met me. Yeah.
Okay. So I can see kind of when I met you, you seemed so vibrant and free. And joyful, but then like also it was actually coming out of a time that had been very difficult for you at the same time.
Yeah.
Right. So being divorced, kind of leaving the life that you had lived for 20 years.
Yeah. Right.
How did you kind of manage both the uncertainty and the hard, difficult part of this transition and also this freedom and joy?
Yeah, I think at the beginning, the freedom was just so, it was incredible. I have this quite funny video of me like walking backwards out of the corporate gates of my job and my team like waving goodbye, going bye. And I was like, bye. Like literally, it's like one of my favorite videos because it just captures that moment in time. And I was so excited. And it had coincided with me meeting a new guy as well, which we can talk about in a second. So at the beginning, when you met me in Bali, I was just so excited by the unknown, right? The unknown was exciting at that point.
Yeah.
But very quickly, actually, as that Bali trip came to an end, because I was there for a month, then reality was like, okay, so when I get home, like, what the hell am I going to do? Like, what?
Yeah.
Like, I need to do something. And I just didn't know what that was. And like, this is actually the interesting part is that I got a coach, right? So I got a coach and she kind of said like, what do you want to focus on? And I said, I want to focus on like two key things. One is embracing uncertainty because I was about to enter the most uncertain period of my whole life. Mm-hmm. So that was one thing that I wanted to work on. And the other thing was I recognized like kind of patterns of behavior in myself where I would always tend to like overgive and get kind of super anxious. And I kind of saw this pause as like an opportunity to start to go deep on that and start to work on why I did that and where that was coming from. So yeah, it was kind of, it was a lot of like inner work. You obviously caught me when I was in the like super excited phase, but quite quickly when I got back from Bali, the reality of like, I'm now in a long distance relationship because that had happened. What am I going to do? Like, I need to work. I can't retire. So what the hell am I going to do? And now I'm in this long distance relationship. Like, I had to factor that into the equation as well. So I do remember coming back from Bali and then like kind of the reality of all my decisions was like, and it was scary. It's scary.
Okay. So I'd like to highlight that too. It's sometimes when we think of progressing or making a transition, we have an idea that we make a plan, we execute, and then we're at the top of the mountain, end of story. But that doesn't happen. It's just like peaks and valleys, peaks and valleys.
It so is. Oh my God. Yeah, it is.
Right.
I think people don't always see that, right? Because when you tell the story afterwards, and even now there's peaks and troughs, right? But people just see like kind of the overall story and you're like, no, there's some really shit bits underneath that that were tough and hard and where I was scared and where I was like, oh my God, I just want to go back to what I know because it was safe. But you're like, no, no, I can't, you know. But I mean, I kind of did on a couple of occasions, right? So there's definitely been like a couple of steps forward and then like quite a few steps back and then a little step forward and then a little step back. It's not been linear at all.
Right.
It's not been linear.
Okay. So you're leaving your job in corporate and you're leaving the country for the unknown and you're taking an adventure in Bali. And somewhere in this journey, you meet someone that you end up in a long distance relationship with. You want to say more about that?
Yeah. So I literally was working my notice at my job. So I had like a month, in London. So this was before I left. So I had like a month to go. And I knew that I had the summer off. I knew that I was going to Bali in September. So I kind of had this like, it was like this freedom. Like I was kind of like really happy, right? I was just so excited about kind of the summer to come and going to Bali. And so I think I was in like a different mindset, right? I was in that kind of anything is possible mindset. So I'd been single for a couple of years and I'd been using the dating apps in London. And, you know, they're a bit hit and miss, you know, I'd been on a ton of dates and stuff. And then this particular guy, who is now my partner, like we met on an app and we started to chat. And then he said he was from Cornwall. Because the way that we met was we crossed paths on this dating app in London. It's called Happn. So like you're out doing your thing, they're out doing their thing. And at some point, like we crossed paths one night.
Yeah.
And then, so we came up on each other's like feed and I started chatting to him. And then he was like, oh, what should I do on a rainy day in London? And I was like, well, why wouldn't you know? Because I hadn't realized that he wasn't from London. And they said, oh, I'm from Cornwall. And I remember just, I was at work. I can remember the conversation. I was like, ah, he's from Cornwall, like, bah.
Which is 5 hours away on the coast, right?
5 hours away, right? Just really far. So I just gave him some like ideas because we're both into art and food. I was like, oh, you should go to this gallery and you should go to this place. And he said, oh, you seem to like be into the same kind of things as me. Would you like to go for a drink on Friday? I still remember I was like, oh, well, you know, you live in Cornwall, I live in London. So, and then I still remember the friend that I sat next to at work, I was like, you know, kind of giving her a running commentary. And she said, why don't you just go? Like, what are you doing on Friday? And I was like, actually, I'm not doing anything. She was like, well, it would be fun, right? So we went for cocktails. We like had this amazing, really fun time. Like we had a little kiss at the end of the night. But then I was just super like blasé about it, to be honest. I was like, well, that was a fun night with a fun guy, but I probably will never see him again, right? Because he lives in Cornwall. And then he was quite keen to like see me again before he went back to Cornwall. I think he had a few days and he said, oh, could I see you again, take you for dinner? And the particular day that he suggested, I had plans with my girlfriend. So I was like, oh, I'm really sorry, I can't do that day. So he went back to Cornwall and he said, oh, I'd like to keep in touch. And I said, well, probably best as friends, right? Because of the distance. And he was so cool about it. He didn't say like, you know, he just went, okay, that will be nice. So we kept in touch as friends for like the next month. He would just message me like, how's your week? How are you doing? How's work? And how are you feeling about like finishing your, you know, leaving your job? And so we would just chat, and then we were chatting like on the phone, and then we were like chatting on like video chat. Ooh. And then and then I remember saying to my friends, okay, now this is really inconvenient because I really like this guy. And it was literally just before I was about to go to Bali too, right? So because I finished my job in July, then he came back to London in August, and like we hung out for the whole week. And by the end of this week, I was like, okay, this is something. But I was going to Bali for a month. So we started to kind of date, I guess, long distance. And then I said, oh, by the way, I'm going to Bali for a month. So, you know, and so then we were trying to do the time zone thing. And then when I came back from Bali, then, you know, by this point, we knew it was something. And then I was spending the next year, like, long distance. So I was still in London. He was in Cornwall. So I was trying to figure out what the hell I was doing with like work, and I was trying to like spend as much time in Cornwall. So it was really exciting, but very unsettling because, you know, you're trying to establish a new relationship. And I was also trying to establish what I was doing for work, and they're exciting things, but like both happening at the same time was, it's pretty crazy, right?
Yeah.
Pretty crazy.
What were you trying to do for work? You said for a year you were trying to figure something out. So what were the things that you were considering?
Yeah, I knew I didn't want to go back to corporate, right? And, you know, part of me was like, do I want to stay in marketing? I just wasn't sure. So I actually then just set myself up as like a freelance marketing consultant because it was just kind of easy, right? I was like, it's what I know. I had quite a few contacts, and that enabled me to kind of be a bit more fluid with my time so I could come back and forth to Cornwall and London. So I just started doing a few kind of like projects for like people that I knew. So doing like, you know, kind of just freelance marketing consultancy for people. But in my heart, I was like, I don't know if this is it. Like, it wasn't easy because setting yourself up as self-employed isn't easy, but it was easier than doing something completely different, right? So that kind of worked for like that year. It kind of, you know, I managed to get some like good contracts, but my heart was like, this isn't maybe a shift enough. Mm-hmm. I'm still kind of playing it kind of safe, like sticking to marketing, right?
So what were you experiencing in your body? Or like, was it like at night, were you feeling discomfort? Were you feeling frustration? Or what was the experience like?
So I remember like my sleep was quite affected because I would just like, I'd have like the whole day, and then it was at night when I got into bed because I was living by myself, right? And then I would just be like, what am I doing? like, I don't know where this is going. Like, what? I'm in this really exciting relationship and the work thing is kind of working, but it was just like this, it would be at night when like it would hit me of like, what am I doing?
Yeah.
Like, where am I going with this? Like, where is this leading to? And also, I just remember I was so used to a routine, right? 20 years of corporate where right. You have to be in the office at 9 and then you finish at 5 and like everything's structured for you. And I like had zero structure. And
okay.
It was just so hard. I was like, where do I want to work from? Do I want to work from my house? Should I go to like a little coffee shop? Like I tried all these different, and I just remember feeling like this is just, I just feel like it was super awkward. I was like, I don't know. You know, like I remember going to this little co-working space. I was like, I don't know if this is where I want to be. Like, I just found it. I was just so out of kind of, it was just like really uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. I just couldn't kind of, I was like, I don't know what I'm doing. I don't know what I'm doing.
Isn't it funny when we're working in corporate and all we want is freedom and autonomy to do all of the things on our time, where and when we say we want to go and how we want to do it. And then when you get that chance, it's like, oh shit.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Because I was like, oh, it'll be really fun to like work from a coffee shop or go to a co-working space, or it could be really cool to work from my garden. But then it just felt like really awkward and uncomfortable. Yeah. And I just couldn't find like a routine with it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, I can really.
Yeah, it was just weird. And I remember thinking, I don't know, this just doesn't feel right. And actually, I ended up getting a contract for somebody that I used to work with, my old boss, and I had to go into the office. So it wasn't like a full-time job. It was just for like a few months. But I kind of was like, oh, at least I know, you know, I go to the office and right. It's more structured.
You're kind of like weaning off that life.
Yeah, exactly. But it was only 3 days a week, right? So it was kind of perfect because the other 2 days I could be more flexible. But it was at that point, like after a year of doing that and the long distance relationship, by this point, I knew that like it was, you know, it was kind of something big. Mm-hmm. And my next decision was like, well, am I going to move to Cornwall then? Because how else is this going to work, right? Somebody has to move. And he had a restaurant in Cornwall. He's a chef. So he couldn't like leave that behind, right? And I was the one with the more flexible kind of lifestyle at this point. So I just said, how about I move to Cornwall? And he's like, well, I would love that, you know, but only if you are ready or only if you want to do that. And I was just like, hey, let's just do it.
Yeah. You know, like long distance for a year. That's a while.
Yeah, that was tough. And because he's a chef, he worked like kind of, you know, unsociable hours. So we were like catching moments to chat and, you know, it was difficult. So at this point, I just contacted some like agents and said, I'm interested in, because I owned my own house. I was like, let me rent out my house because I didn't want to sell it at that point. I was like, let's just rent it out. And I packed my stuff in a van and drove to Cornwall with like, I didn't know what I was going to do when I got here, right? I was like, again, I thought I'll just take a bit of time, like a few months to kind of acclimatize. And my friends were like, what are you doing? Like, you're such a London girl. They couldn't imagine me in this kind of like chilled beach town, right? But I was like, well, I'm just going to give it a go, right? What's the worst that can happen? If it doesn't work out, I can come back.
Right.
And my family were like, what are you doing? Like, it's so far away. We won't see you.
Did that discourage you or did it fuel you?
I mean, I was going to do it anyway.
Right.
Kind of who I am. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I remember my dad, because I came here for like a month, kind of just as, not as a trial run, I was always moving, but just to kind of like start to acclimatize. And my parents came down to visit because they were like, if you're going to move to this place, we want to come and check it out. Mm-hmm. And I remember my dad having a conversation with me and he's like, I'm kind of worried. And I was like, what are you worried about, Dad? Like, well, what are you going to do for work when you get there? Like, I don't know. I'll figure it out. I have some savings. Like, I don't have to make any decisions like immediately. And he's like, oh, I'm just, you know, and it's just so different. Like, how will you make friends? And,
right.
You know, your partner is a chef. Like, he works crazy hours. Like, that's going to be hard. And he was just like, he was just worried for me. I was like, Dad, I've got this, you know. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't know all the answers to those things, but I'll figure it out.
Okay.
It's kind of, you know,
yeah.
I said to him, I always figure stuff out, Dad. It's cool.
What's it like when you get loved ones expressing their concern in that way? I know that that's a big thing that I talk with my clients about, and it makes it kind of a more difficult transition when loved ones are concerned and they're saying things out of love. Sometimes it can add more weight to making a decision. And I want to know what the impact is on you when you have your friends, your family, your dad expressing their love and concern in this way.
So it's interesting. Normally my answer is, you don't know me very well. It's kind of what I would say normally. When they kind of express concern, I go, I hear what you're saying, but I can figure this out. Like almost like don't underestimate me, I guess, mm-hmm, is kind mm-hmm. of like.
Yeah.
Kind of what I've said to them before is like, yeah, it's scary. And yeah, I don't know the answers, but like, I kind of go, do you know me?
Do you even know me?
Do you even know me? Like I've got this, right?
Right, right.
It's kind of my response normally. And yeah, this feeling of like, almost like don't say I can't do something because it makes me even more determined to do it.
Okay, so yeah, so for you, it's just like you're showing up for yourself in this way. Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, if I think back to like when I wanted to get into advertising, like it was a bit tricky to begin with. Like I was applying for loads of jobs and getting rejections. And even then I remember my dad going, well, maybe it's really competitive. Like maybe it's too difficult to get into advertising. And I was like, no, I'm going to do this. Mm. Like, I will make it happen.
Okay. So you've always been determined and you've always had this self-belief.
Yeah. I think, you know, like obviously sometimes you can't do exactly what you want, but I do think that it's within your power to kind of make stuff happen. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I don't know where that really comes from. I just always have believed that like kind of if you put your mind to something, you can do it.
Yeah. It's a pretty simple concept, right? Just like nothing is impossible. You can go for it if you have the dream for it, if you have the will, and you just work backwards and there you go.
Yeah.
But I mean, if it's so simple, why don't we, more of us, do that?
So, I mean, I have a big thing about like societal expectations, and I think that people just do what they think they should do.
Okay.
And, you know, that was me, right? I was like, well, I should get good grades at school and I should go to university. And like, nobody forced me to go. Like I loved it. It was amazing. Yeah. and you know, then you get the job and then you meet the guy and then you get married and you get buy the house, you know, all the stuff. Right. And then
which
you have 2.4 kids. Yeah. But I got to the point where, so I'd done all of that stuff. It was actually the 2.4 kids thing where I kind of really, yeah, like went, oh, hang on a second. Like I've kind of gone along with all the societal stuff, but this is huge.
Yes.
Like that was the one thing where I was like, okay, I need to be super sure about this decision. This is like, of all the decisions, this is like the biggest one. So, you know, I was in my marriage and we always just said we'd have children like someday. It was always just like someday, someday. And then I got to like my late 30s and it's kind of like, well, someday kind of needs to be now, right? Because we all know as a woman, like you get all this kind of pressure, the clock is ticking, blah, blah, blah. And I was just not sure at all. And like, I'm not saying my husband was putting pressure on me, but like other people were definitely putting pressure on us. Like, right, everybody around us was kind of having kids and moving out of London. They were kind of then, you know, going to the suburbs. So our friends were starting to like leave. And like my parents, because I'm the eldest, were like, you know, what's going on? You guys going to have kids? And friends were like, you guys can have kids. And I remember just like being frozen with fear around this decision. It became like this huge thing that honestly, it took up so much headspace about whether to do it or not. And this is quite a funny story. I actually went to a girlfriend's like party and she was like, we have a card, you know, a tarot reader, she's going to come. And like, it's just for fun kind of thing. And then I went to have my cards read and I expected like this old, like kind of old woman. And there was this really young, beautiful, vibrant woman. And I was like, oh, you are not what I expected from the tarot reader. Right. And I remember she did my cards and she'd never met me before. And she went, oh my God, what is it with you and kids having kids? Exactly. And I was like, what? And she was like, it's like the noise in your head is just like so loud. And I was like, how, what? And she's like, you're like, shall I not? It's just, she goes, that's all I can hear. And I was like, oh my God, this is crazy. And I actually then started to see her privately. She really helped me like through that kind of like tricky, it was a couple of years actually trying to like make that decision about whether to stay in my marriage, whether to have kids. Like, yeah, she was pretty instrumental in some of those decisions. It was like I suddenly felt seen and heard for the first time ever, and crazy that it was through tarot, which I'm pretty rational. I was like, right. I don't really understand this, but it's kind of helping, so right. I'm just gonna go with it. And again, just opening my mind to just different ways of kind of seeing things, different kind of consciousness, because I was so rational before, right? And then I just kind of like let go of that a little bit and went, I don't know how this tarot shit is working, but it's working. So okay. I'm going to go with it.
Right. Was your husband, like what side was he on? Was he wanting to have kids or was he not wanting to have kids?
Like, I think like he was quite into like conforming. Like, again, that was his pattern. So I think he was feeling like left out that all his friends, you know, we were going to like barbecues and like the guys would be standing in the corner with a beer and the women would be over here with the kids. And I was like, I don't think this is for me. So I think fitting in was really important to him. And so he was feeling that pressure to kind of fit in. So, and there's me going, oh, I don't know, I'm not sure. So essentially I went traveling without him, which is pretty crazy, but actually really beautiful of him to let me go. I went away for like a few weeks with a friend to Belize. And I said, I just need some time to like think about this because it's such a huge decision. And I came back and I said, I've been thinking and I don't want kids. And he was like, okay. And I said, look, if that's a game changer, like I get it. But I have to be honest with myself. It's just not for me.
How did you come to that decision?
Just lots and lots of like really deep inner work, like just really, really thinking. Like I read books. I like chatted to people. This tarot woman was really helpful. Like, and I think I don't know, like it's really hard because you can look at the situation afterwards and people go, maybe it was because you were with the wrong guy. Like maybe it was because like if life had been different, maybe you would have made different choices. Maybe I'll never know the answer to that. But all I knew is that at that point in time, like when I made that decision, and it was actually a book, I think the book was called Child Free and Loving It. These books that I read have got really cliche titles. And I just read it and I just resonated with everything in the book. And it gave me this like other way of looking at it. I was like, you don't have to do this, right?
Right.
Like there are loads of people that don't. Like that was what the book was so great. It gave all these kind of, it was written, you know, by people. I think the author had like, you know, interviewed different people about their decisions. And through reading other people's like, I was like, oh my God, that's how I feel. Mm-hmm. So I'm not the only one that feels this way about it. And that was the decision maker really. But I remember having that conversation with my husband. It was really difficult. Like I sat him down. I said, look, I don't want to have kids. And I said, I'm really sorry if that changes everything for you, but I have to be honest. And he said, no, that's cool. He said to me that he was kind of on the fence. He goes, I kind of, you know, there's pros and cons. He said, I want to be with you. So if that's how it is, then that's cool. But I think actually that was the beginning of the end because I felt this amazing, again, sense of freedom. I was like, I'm not having kids. Oh my God, I can do anything I want, right? I can travel. I can, you know, I suddenly got excited about all these possibilities. Whereas he was kind of still kind of here going, oh, you know, and so I was like, let's go on adventures. Let's do this. Let's do that. And he was still kind of here, like teetering on the edge. So essentially what happened with the two of us, we started to live separate lives because I was like, I have all this freedom. I want to travel. I want to do all these like really cool things in London. And he was kind of, oh, I don't know if I want to do all of those things. And so I was like, well, I'm going to do them anyway. And then it did make me realize that like, you know, we were both lonely for different reasons, right? I was lonely because I wanted someone to share these adventures with and these experiences with. And he was lonely because he's like, he was more like, I kind of want to stay home and like be chilled and have like a kind of quieter life. And then we just started to like drift apart, you know? And like nothing bad happened. Like there wasn't like one bad thing. It just over time, I could see that he wasn't getting what he needed and I wasn't getting what I needed. And so I just, I was the one who called time on it.
How long were you married?
So we were together for 10 years, married for 5.
Wow. That's a decade of sharing your life with someone.
Yeah. Well, it was my 30s, right? It was my 30s. And I still remember like the conversation again. I still like the hardest conversation I've ever had in my life, like sitting him down and saying like, I think we're done. And he kind of was half expecting it, but like, you know, like when you finally say the words. And I still remember I wanted to make it, you know, I knew this was going to hurt, like it's going to hurt, right? But I said, I think we should set each other free, is what I said. I said, I think, like, let's not end up hating each other. Let's not do that. Let's not destroy each other, because that's just not nice. Let's just set each other free so that we can go on the paths that are right for us.
Wow.
Yeah, that was tough, obviously.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you have fear around like what happens next in your love life?
100%. Because I was like, I just not long turned 40. And I think, you know, there is something about that new decade that you kind of like reassess, right?
Yeah. What was going on?
Yeah. I remember that exact moment where I remember standing in the shower. That's when we have our like moments, right? And I was like, is it scarier to stay or is it scarier to go? Both were terrifying.
Right.
I was like, if I stay, then I have to try and make this work. And I don't know if I can. Like, we'd really tried, right? We'd been to like therapy as a couple. And it's just like, it's just, this is really hard. And like, I don't think we're ever really gonna get what we need. Mm-hmm. But if I go again, like, I don't know, like, what does this look like? I didn't really know many people that were divorced. I was like, I don't know. Like, what if I never meet anybody ever again? But like in that moment, like which one was scarier? Mm-hmm. And staying was scarier. Yeah.
That's a good way to make a decision, right? I mean, you have a hard choice. Both choices are difficult to make, right? But just kind of weighing them and which one like feels scarier to you? Which one can you see yourself in the future, you know, being in a happier position or being in a worse position? Like, what feels more you?
Yeah. And staying was scarier. So that's when I made the decision. But again, I was leaping into that absolute unknown of being single again. Like, you know, then, you know, financially as well, that was like, because we had a house together. And so like, I had to like buy him out, mm-hmm. you know, I kind of had to like remortgage the house. And like, so I took on this huge financial responsibility. So yes, there was that kind of like emotional wrench, but like financially it was hard, right?
Yeah.
'Cause then it was just me
right.
trying to kind of sustain like all of that stuff.
Yeah.
Which then put additional pressure on me in my corporate career, right? Because I was like, well, I can't walk away from it now, because now I have like this mortgage to pay all by myself. And mm-hmm. I need this level of income to like sustain myself.
Right. But it sounds like it was the best decision you could have made.
100%. And like, this is like so serendipitous that we're having this conversation, because he contacted me like last week. Like, we didn't fall out, but we just agreed that it was easier, like, not to follow each other on social media and stuff. So we don't really, like, keep in touch. But he messaged me, like, the other day on Facebook. And I was like, oh, my God, like, why is he messaging me? And he said, hi. So this is a bit weird, but here goes. He said, I'm getting married again.
Wow.
I know. And I was like, okay. And the reason that he was contacting me, this is so typical of, like, how our relationship was, is, like, he couldn't find any of the paperwork for the divorce and he needed it to like get married again. And he goes, I don't suppose like you have a record of all the details of our divorce, because I need them to get married again. And of course I did, in my little filing system. And I was like, yeah, sure, let me just get it for you. And it was really cute, because he obviously felt really uncomfortable like asking me and telling me. And he said, I'm getting married again. And he said, go me. And then
sweet.
At the end, he said, you know, thanks so much, whatever. And he said, his name was John. He put John, and in brackets, he put husband number one.
Oh my goodness.
And which is super cute, like, right.
So how was that for you? Getting a like kind of.
Yeah, all of this. Well, that was it. I then kind of reached out to some of my friends. I was like, you'll never guess what? Like, John's getting remarried. And I was fine. I'm so happy for him. I literally, like there was no sadness at all. There was, it was only joy. I was like, I'm so pleased that he is happy and that he's like, that hadn't like kind of, that experience didn't stop him from like getting married again,
And I know that it happens to a lot of people.
I felt nothing but joy for him, honestly. Mm. I was like, I'm so pleased that he's okay and he's happy and he's thriving and yeah.
You set each other free.
Totally, right?
For people who are, you know, in a situation, or if they were to ever find themselves in a situation like that where it's hard to stay or it's hard to go and it just seems paralyzing, or maybe the right answer is to go, but it just seems so like financially a burden, emotionally a burden. Do you have any piece of advice?
You know, at the time, some of it seemed impossible, right? Mm-hmm. Because I was like, how is this going to work financially? Like, what's going to happen? Like, who's going to live where? Like, what are we going to do? And I guess my advice would be like, just do one step at a time.
Okay.
Because the whole thing feels so huge, mm-hmm. like so huge.
Yeah.
I mean, I confided in a couple of friends, like a couple of friends knew what was happening. So the only thing that I did do is make an immediate plan for like after I'd had the conversation, because I knew once I had this conversation, like somebody then had to like move out or, you know, right. So I said that I would move out. And I had a friend who kind of knew what was happening and she was ready to catch me. Right.
That's so nice. So
she goes, you know, the bed's ready and everything's ready. So like, and I had a case like already in the car because I didn't want to then have to pack in front of him because that would just been like super awful. So like, yeah, he goes, I still remember. He's like, so you're going now? And I was like, well, yeah, like I'm going. And I actually, I went to my parents for one night to tell them because they didn't know. So I went to my parents and like rocked up at their front door and was like, hi, I just left my husband.
Oh shit.
And then so I was with them for like 24 hours and then straight after I went to stay with my friend for a few weeks. And that's as far as I could plan, right? I was like, I can't plan beyond that. And then the next step, you know, just figuring out like who was, you know, then eventually he was going to move out, I was going to buy him out. So like then it's like things started to happen. But yeah, just figure out like day one, what am I going to do? And then it just, yeah, and then you just start to like things start to happen after that. But
right.
If I thought about it too much, I wouldn't have done it, right? So mm-hmm. I just thought about the like the first step.
Right. Yeah, the first step in this process. And then
yeah.
Once that's done, then you can focus on something else. And at that point, you probably couldn't have imagined that your life would turn out like this. You couldn't have planned for it.
No way. I do remember having that moment, though, like a few months later going, I wonder, like, what direction my life will go in, right? Like, and kind of being quite excited by it. Obviously, it was really sad and really horrible to have hurt someone in that way and to see their pain. But just knowing that it was the right decision, even though it was really hard, I allowed myself that little bit of like, what might happen and who might I meet or what opportunities might present themselves, right? And that little kind of glimmer of excitement of like, where might it go? Yeah. And yeah, if someone had said to me, you're going to meet somebody, you're going to move to Cornwall, like, I would be like, don't be stupid. No, I'm not.
Right.
Like, I could never have imagined that. It wasn't, you know, like some people think it was like my dream to move to Cornwall. It was never on my radar. Like, it was not on my radar at all.
Yeah. So your life happens when you take a series of risks, like your life happened.
Yes.
And you made a lot of hard decisions. And I feel like that's kind of a lesson that I'm taking from your story, right? Because if you didn't quit marketing, if you didn't leave your marriage, right? If you didn't travel and do all of these things that light you up, like what would life be like for you?
Yeah, 100%. Exactly.
We wouldn't be sitting here having this conversation.
I know, right? I mean, and that's what I love about life when you like kind of, you know, nobody likes uncertainty. Like, as humans, we don't like it, right? It's super uncomfortable for us. But when you embrace it and you kind of like lean into uncertainty, then those moments happen that you could never have imagined, right? So you go on a trip somewhere and you meet somebody, and here we are still talking like years later.
Yeah.
Or I'm out in Soho in London, like minding my own business, and I cross paths with my partner. Like, do you know what I mean? It's like, and you just don't know. Mm-hmm. But if you just let that kind of unfold a little bit,
yeah,
the opportunities present themselves, and then you choose like to grab them or not.
Right.
And they're still scary. Like, I still remember people going, are you sure you want to do this? Like, long distance, like move to Cornwall, like this is big. Oh, well, let's give it a go.
Yeah. So share with us what happened after you moved to Cornwall. Like, so.
Oh my God. So, I mean, you know, the story continues really, and we maybe don't have time to dive into all of it. But when I got here, like, it just wasn't plain sailing. You know, I had this image of like, okay, so I'm going to move to Cornwall. I'm with this guy that I love, and we're going to have this amazing life, and, you know, it's going to be glorious. And it just wasn't, right? I got here, it was really tough. Like, his business, then he had to sell his business because it wasn't doing so well. And I was like, okay, so already this is not going to plan. I then freaked out and panicked and was like, oh my God, I need to get a job. Because he didn't have a job. So then I got another marketing job. I just defaulted back to what I knew. And I was like, here I am again. Like, what am I doing? This is not what I want to do. Mm-hmm. So I had a couple of different marketing jobs down here. They just weren't the right fit. He was kind of trying to figure out what he was doing. He got another job. Then he got made redundant. It was just like crazy couple of years when I first got here.
Yeah,
I felt like I'd lost my identity a bit. I was like, I'm London and I'm in Cornwall. Like, mm-hmm. am I London girl? Am I Cornwall girl? Like, who am I? Like, what's going on? You know, it was really hard because it, for those people that don't know, like the difference, it's kind of like you going from San Fran to Bali, right? It's just culturally so different. Everybody's super slow here. It's much, you know, like it's just so different.
Right.
And I just couldn't find my groove here. I was like, what am I doing? And then actually it was the pandemic that then forced us all, not just me, like to have another pause and go, right, let's stop for a second, because I got furloughed from my job. So essentially I was being paid not to work because the government were like subsidizing us, right? I was like, I'm not going to get this opportunity ever again to like be paid to have time off, right? So I grabbed it. And what I'd been thinking about in the back of my mind for a really long time was to train as a coach, right? So I was like, there's this opportunity of time that I'm never going to get back again. So I just grabbed it. So I had 6 months off work being paid by the government. So I did my coach training.
That's amazing, by the way. Like, that's another just, you know, kind of favor from the universe, right?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah.
Right, here you go. What was it about coaching that attracted you?
So I think it's because I'd been coached, like going back to when we first met and when I first started to take these kind of decisions, the coach was so helpful to me. And so I've always been interested in psychology and kind of like why we do what we do and kind of like mental health. And it just all seemed to kind of come together in coaching. So it was because I'd been coached and I just saw the power of it. And I thought, wow, that's super interesting. I think I would really be interested in that. And then, so when I started to do my coaching diploma, I just loved it so much. Like, and crazy because it was during the pandemic, so it was all on Zoom. So like they flipped it to a remote learning, and it was over like different weekends, like once a month over the whole weekend. And I loved those weekends so much. I was like, oh my God, I get to like, and I love learning and like expanding my kind of thinking. And it was just amazing. I like absolutely loved it. But even then people are like, so what are you going to do when you finish? Are you going to become like a full-time coach or like what? I was like, I don't know.
Just this first step, right?
Yeah, just this first step. I was like, I'm just really interested. And then again, I'll figure it out, right? A path will emerge.
Yep.
You know?
And, I love that.
And it has.
Yeah. I love that idea of just following the things that you're passionate about, that you're curious about, or doing the things that you've always wanted to do right when you have the opportunity to do it.
Definitely.
Sometimes they can remain in the back of your mind.
Of course.
Right?
Yeah. So I believe, you know, it sounds a bit woo-woo, and again, it comes back to the tarot, whatever, but like, I more and more believe that the universe just kind of like gives you opportunities. I mean, maybe you create them, right? It depends which way you look at it. But I feel like at key moments, things kind of get handed to me. And so I do believe that somehow like the universe synchronizes like where you're supposed to be and like things appear.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's not always going to be pleasant, right? But the universe conspires to get you what you want.
Totally. Yeah. And I think, I grabbed that opportunity and then that's taken me on a whole new path.
Yeah. So what's the path been like since coaching?
Yeah. So I did my training and finished in 2020. So that was 2 years ago. And then to begin with, I didn't know. I was like, do I want to be a full-time coach? Like, I'm going to set up my own coaching practice. So I did that for a bit and it was cool, but I wasn't sure. I don't know. I wasn't sure if that was exactly my path because I'm really interested in mental health as well. So then I saw a project with a mental health charity in the UK. It's called Mind. It's like a really famous mental health charity. And I saw a role advertised and it was just one day a week. It wasn't full time, but I really wanted to do that. So then I started doing this project for them, which I've just finished. So that kind of took me in that direction. And then I wasn't sure, did I want to be like a pure coach? Did I want to be more like a therapist? I wasn't sure which route I was going to take. And then an opportunity presented itself. I was on LinkedIn and I saw like this company, because I had like coach as like a, you know, like an alert. And it came up that there was this job for this company, like a startup for coaches. So I applied and like went through the process. And so now I'm working for them. So the company, and it's crazy because it combines my old life and my new life. So this company does apprenticeships for young people. So they have a job and 80% of their time is spent in the job. And then 20% of the time is spent doing their training with us. So we like provide training. So I'm on the digital marketing program. So they're learning digital marketing. So they do like workshops and like boot camps and like masterclasses in digital marketing. And then once a month, I coach them. So
wonderful.
I coach them in kind of like technical skills, like so kind of mentor slash coach, right? So some of it's more technical. They have to produce like a portfolio of work. So I help them to create that. But also it is coaching because they're all career starters. They're all like in their first job. So I guess the way I see it is I kind of get to be the person that I didn't have.
Oh, I love that.
Right. At that point in my career, like, because I'm not their boss. I'm not like their parents. I'm like another neutral person that they can talk to. So already some of the themes coming up are like, you know, I don't know how to like network and kind of get to know my colleagues because everyone's working in a hybrid way. So that's like harder for them. Or another guy's going, I don't know how to balance like working full time and like going to the gym and seeing my friends. And how do I do that? And so these kind of more softer like life skills, you know, I get to coach them on. So, and it's all remote, right? So before the pandemic, this role would not even have been possible. But in the pandemic, this company flipped their model to fully remote. So when I was interviewing, I was like, you know, I live in Cornwall, right? And they were like, it's fine. So my job is remote and I have to go to London once a month. So I get a little fix of the city.
Perfect.
Yeah. I know, right? And again, that opportunity presented itself and that opportunity would not have existed before the pandemic. So much as the pandemic was, you know, awful for everybody and shit, but for me, it was an opportunity because I retrained and then a new opportunity that would not have existed pre-pandemic has manifested, right? So here I am.
Right. So just seizing this opportunity that came from a pretty tragic pandemic that happened around the world, but seeing kind of the opportunity in it, it served you, right? You found it. You couldn't have planned for it. So I love that you were just able to kind of roll with what shows up.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, the pandemic, you know, that sounds like it was all great. It wasn't, because, you know, I wasn't working, my partner wasn't working, he was in hospitality, everything shut down.
Right.
So it was such a super anxious time on so many levels. But within that, I was able to go, okay, this is all really shit. However, the world is starting to change, and for all of us. And I can either like dive into that and again, like embrace that uncertainty.
Yep.
Or I can sit in fear of it and like resist it. And, you know, more and more of us are working in such different ways. Like that's a whole other topic, right? Mm-hmm. About the world of work and how it's changing. And I thought I can either dive into this like head first and like embrace remote working and like dive into this new way, or I can resist it. And so I kind of just dove straight in.
I love that.
Let's see how this works, right?
You know, what I'm noticing is one of your superpowers is your ability to leverage uncertainty or to be comfortable with uncertainty.
And it's crazy because, I mean, it's interesting that you're saying this as a coach, because that's what my first ever coach that I worked with said to me, because I was like, oh my God, I don't like uncertainty. Like I hate taking risks, blah, 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 blah. And then she was like, hang on a second. This is the girl that like jumps on a plane by herself and goes traveling and like does this, that, and the other. She goes, that doesn't sound like somebody who is scared of risk and scared of uncertainty. And I was like, oh my God. And you'd like, you need someone else to hold up a mirror to like make you realize, because that was an old story I was telling myself, right? That I was scared of things. And she's like, your actions actually say something quite different. So that doesn't sound like somebody who's scared of like the unknown, because you've done some pretty kind of crazy stuff already in your life. So let's just work with that, you know?
Yeah. And owning that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So now, no, I don't think I'm that person at all. I think I'm the person who takes the risks and like embraces stuff. But it was just an old story I was telling myself about that I couldn't do certain things, or certain things weren't possible, or that I was scared of the unknown. And, you know, I still am to a certain extent, but I've proven time and time again. And it's the same thing about like, well, I'll just figure it out. And if that doesn't work out, then, you know, because people now are like, well, what if that doesn't work out? I was like, then I'll do something else.
Right. It always works out. Everything is going to be okay in the end.
Figure it out somehow, right?
Yeah. And I love that idea of having this story or this limiting belief and then finding evidence in your life where it's totally bullshit.
It's totally bullshit. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, there was some other stuff that came out of that, is that, you know, like, it was more societal stuff and some like kind of family stuff about not taking risks and not doing stuff. And I was like, hang on a minute, that's not my story. Mm-hmm. That's actually not my story. That's somebody else's. So, you know, that's society's story or whatever it is. It's not mine. Yeah. So just shedding that and then owning my own story has been, you know, and that coach helped me to see that, right? Which is why it's so powerful.
It is. Yeah, it's great that you can see you, right? Can see and feel and do and take action that reflects who you are and what you want.
Yeah.
Despite what other people say, despite what it should look like, you went and did what felt right for you.
Yeah. And I just hope, I guess, to come full circle, I just hope that the young people that I'm coaching now, because they're kind of like in their maybe like early 20s, you know, I didn't start to make some of these kind of do these things until my 40s, right? So, you know, I hope that by just having a coach at that point in their journey, which I didn't have, right? I don't think coaching was even a thing back then, maybe, but, you know, helping them to kind of just carve their own path in this crazy new world that we're all in, right? And hoping that I can inspire them or help them to understand themselves, you know, at this earlier point in their lives, to like see where that then, what decisions they make, it'll be great to see.
Yeah, it must be so rewarding.
Yeah, yeah. So I've only just started working with them, but already I'm just so, and also like they're like Gen Z, right? So I'm kind of like, how they see the world differently. So it's just really interesting, yeah, to kind of see the world through their eyes and like help support them on this journey that they're on. I'll be working with them for like a year. Okay. So, and then I'll get some new ones. So I feel like they're my little flock. I'm kind of quite like, helping to like kind of guide them and support them and see, you know, see their growth, hopefully, you know, in that year with them, which will be just like amazing.
Yeah. Well, you'll have to keep me posted.
I shall. Yeah, definitely.
Thank you so much for sharing the details of your story. I knew some of it, but I loved how some of the holes were filled in with a lot more details and I learned more about you. Mm. Is there anything else that you'd like to say or share before we end?
I just think that the one magical thing that has happened on all of these journeys is like the people that I've met along the way. Like when you go against the grain and when you like kind of decide to take different routes and like different opportunities, like I found my people as well, I guess is what I wanted to say, is like by just kind of putting myself in, you know, because when I moved to Cornwall, people were like, oh, well, you don't know anyone. I was like, it's fine. Like I'll find my people. And I totally have. And when I've traveled, and I just love that I have, like, I've stayed connected with you and other people that I've met traveling. Like I've, you know, your people don't have to all be like here around you. Like they can be all over. And also when you find them, like keep in touch with them.
Yep.
It's like, I just have all these amazing, beautiful people that are doing amazing, inspiring things all over the world. And, you know, like when you find those connections, it's just like, it's super magical, basically.
Right. Yeah. Thanks for sharing that also, right? That even in your 30s or 40s, like you can still meet people that change your life or that add, you know, so much joy, that add inspiration, that fill you up.
Totally. And, you know, I think that's why I love to travel, because you meet people like from different, you know, backgrounds, different perspectives. But yeah, that's the one thing that like I actually find quite easy is like connecting with people. You know, well, like when I moved to Cornwall, I would just like, you know, meet somebody at like an event or something. And I was like, I think we should be friends.
Right.
And they would be like, okay. And I was like, yeah, should we be friends?
I think that's kind of how it went when we met. We were like, yeah.
Should we be friends?
Yeah, I like your energy. Me too.
Yeah, exactly.
Let's be friends.
And again, like people go, oh my God, how can you say that? I was like, well, just ask, like, do you want to stay in contact? Like, should we exchange details? Like, do you want to go for coffee? Do you know what I mean? It's like, just being like open to those connections. And I just have the most wonderful friends. And again, like that's really important to me to kind of cultivate that, because when you're going through a transition, like you need your people around you, right? Yeah. So like when you're having that moment of like, what the fuck am I doing? And they go, I'm so proud of you. Like you've got this, like all of that, you know, you need your cheerleaders, right?
Okay. So that's it. Like lean on your support system and the people in your life.
Yeah. And the people, you'll find them.
Yeah. Beautiful.
Full circle.
Yeah. Thanks again. It was really nice.
You are welcome.
Yeah. Learning more about you. All right. Well, thanks so much for being on the show.
You are welcome. It's been lovely to chat.
Thanks for listening to this week's episode of The Undercurrent Podcast. If we're not yet connected on Instagram, give me a follow at Liana Lumawig and at The Undercurrent Podcast. For more tips on how to design your life on your terms, or if you'd like to reach out, visit lianalumawig.com, or you can always DM me on Instagram at The Undercurrent Podcast. Take care, my friends, and see you next week.